starts this is Screen Tone Club Live. Only episode 10 of the podcast. We're already taking over small conference rooms in convention centres. My name is Elliot Page, as always, and as always joining me is Mr. Andy Hanley. How are you doing, Andy?
Yeah, not too bad. I've survived October. I had a terrible October of non-stop events, and I've somehow come out the other end, so I'm taking that as positive.
It's your own damn fault. You knew it was the anime life. The anime life. L-Y-F-E. Yeah, so, you know, the anime life didn't choose... Oh, no, abandoning this joke, pulling the ripcord. So, we've just explained who the heck we are. We're a pair of... Well, I think everyone in here knows who we are already. And everyone who's out there already is subscribed to the podcast.
This is true. I mean, we should probably introduce ourselves just in case somebody has no idea who we are, I guess.
Yeah, so my name is Elliot Page. I read a lot of manga. I run a search engine for legal digital manga available to you on the internet. Manga Search, if you put dot before... CH. I need to get another URL. I bought that URL to stop being mocked for the other bad one I had, and I can't pronounce this one. So, good idea.
Yeah, so I'm Andy Hanley. I'm the marketing manager for Anime Limited. I also read a lot of manga, but it's mostly Elliot's fault.
As we have both agreed. Yeah. It's the first thing that kind of kicked us off on this road of starting a manga podcast was, hey, we both read too much about this. Let's turn this into something? I don't know. So, first part of the podcast we'd normally do, which is returning champions, except there aren't any at the moment.
No, there are not.
I have, like, the returning champions list of shame, which is Dead Dead Demons DDDD Destruction. I think I got that right. And also, like, more of... what's the other one? Damn... No, I'm caught up on the Promised Neverland.
Yeah, we're caught up on that one.
No, I'm still burning to read more of it, though, given that I recently, pointing at someone in the first front row, recently spent a weekend in a hotel room with someone who kept, like, sort of oogling spoilers for it.
But yeah, I'm also on the kind of shame that I haven't caught up with the Dead Demon yet, because I'm dying to read the third volume of it, but just have not had time.
Yeah, October and all that.
Indeed.
Hey. So, moving on, we might as well get on to the actual topics of this here manga podcast, where we do manga discussion. I should have mentioned what the podcast is about to stop. Man, having an audience really discombobulates you. So first topic is Inside Mary. This was my pick. This is a strange duck in terms of availability, which is why there's like five different bullet points dedicated to it. So this was initially one of Crunchyroll Manga's gets. They got and then translated the assets direct from Kodansha, and they put it up, and it's now since languished on Crunchyroll Manga, because Crunchyroll Manga. More on that later. It's also been picked up for release by the new publisher Denpa Books, which is by, like, conflict of interest statement, personal friend Ed Chavez, who used to run basically everything, nearly. Like, he ran an awful lot of stuff at Vertical Inc., if you remember Vertical Comics. So he jumped ship, kind of went on a vision quest, posted a lot of pictures of good food, and then reappeared on Twitter going, hey, I'm making a publisher, I have some investment from Faku Books and Jacob, so not directly from Faku, but from Jacob from Faku. I'm going to get an angry email about this, aren't I? But basically, he started up a new publisher and has gone full ham on releasing manga, unsurprisingly, given that's what he does. And so one of his first releases is Inside Mary. It looks quite plush, actually, as if it released the first pack shot of the actual books. So,
Okay, yeah, I hadn't seen that, but I know they've had some pretty good picks in their initial lineup, so I'm kind of keen to see what they do with them.
Some of them also out of left field, like one of their picks, sorry for the digression, everyone, but one of their picks was like an art book by Range Murata, who I assumed like no one was going to publish because most of it's borderline lolicon, guys. But he's releasing it, whatever. Ed knows what he's doing. At least he seems to know what he's doing. So I'm willing to give him benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, Inside Mary. So Inside Mary, as you can see from the first volume sort of like pack shot behind me, but it's by Shuzuo Oshimi. I hope I pronounced that right. Oh, someone's trying to get in. I'm going to carry on. hello. Sorry, for the people listening on the recording, we have more guests. Hello, lovely guests. The locks have gone funny again, much like last year. So it's by Shuzo Oshimi.
Shuzo Oshimi.
Thank you, Jesus. This is why I have Andy here to help me with my pronunciation. But anyway, it's a very manga by that author. This guy was the one who previously did Flowers of Evil, the 11-volume horror banger. Well, horror ennui and teenage puberty manga. And also currently writing the kind of gangbuster vampire story, Happiness, which... if anything, that story does not have any happiness and it's just kind of a thing. So, you know, but it's very, this is very much a, like, this author work. This first volume covers 8 chapters out of the 80 chapter bulk. It comes out to about 9 volumes all told, according to Wikipedia. It's all available. It's all available digitally on Crunchyroll, available to read if you can get your browser to do it. And as mentioned, physical release is coming soon. So, this is kind of a setup, but the basic idea is main character, like unassuming nerd lord, university dropout with glasses, is basically pulling a welcome to the NHK, and he's lying to his parents, dropped out, and he's just playing Dark Souls all day. Lopsine kind of reprobate Twitch streamer or something. Hello, yes, and. sorry, playing to the audience now. But basically, he has completely dropped out. He's living in a pigsty. He's pulling the whole welcome to the NHK thing. But he is making time for one thing every day, which is popping down to the convenience store for 9 p.m. every day to oogle this poor lass who comes in to buy a bar of chocolate and a drink without fail. And then he stalks her on the way home. Like, the manga does the clever thing, of course, being from his point of view, where it doesn't actually say the words stalker, and of course he will say to others later, I'm not a stalker. Dude, totally. You're doing the textbook definition of stalking. And so he wakes up next day, and he is now the object of his affections, and he's in her body. And it's a Your Name Freaky Friday body swap type story. But it's got some kinks in the tail, which is good, because I feel like media, and in particular manga in some regards, have done this. Like, body swap's been done. Like, again, Your Name, a personal favourite, which is not available, so I probably shouldn't mention it, but The World God Only Knows had a very, very good body swap storyline, but that was one volume, not, you know, 9. So goodness knows where it goes from here. But this first volume kind of has the whole feeling out period of, like, the whole, like, you know, grabbing chest, going, oh, sort of reaction that all men do when they're in a women's body for the first time. That one could have been phrased better. But you get the idea. So basically, this is the kind of feeling out period, but also it's the case where this loser, Isao, I think?
Yeah, Isao Komori.
Thank you. Isao Komori, he's been pushed into marry Yoshizaki's body and is, like, trying to, like, tread water. Like, her friends know something's up. Everyone else knows something's up. Trying to kind of keep head above water and keep up the facade. So, I know I keep saying this, but it's a very much a work from this author. The characters all kind of look like archetypal characters by this author. Like, you've got the femme fatale high school girl, you've got the loser twerp boy who thinks he's all hot shit but ain't, and it's kind of that sort of structure. But you have, of course, some interesting female friends that are ostensibly Mary's friends, and now suddenly Isao's in Mary's body's friends, who are all like, oh, what's up with you, are you okay? And it then comes out that someone twigs what's going on, who likely is themselves a stalker. So Mary has it rough, quite frankly, and ends up with a kind of unlikely ally slash frenemy slash, oh God, please don't stab me, lady with glasses. That's where the first volume kind of leaves off, in this point where they end up in a rather sticky situation.
That's a really bad turn of phrase for anybody who's read this volume, but yes, let's go with that.
They end up in a bad situation where Isao kind of provides incontrovertible proof that he is who he says he is. And, like, so one sort of thing that I can say is, or like, chapter 3, but basically this isn't a straight swap. It's not something that simple. Like, something weird has gone on here. But basically, Isao still exists as Isao and is walking around, going to the convenience store, playing Dark Souls and, you know, doing his daily life. And so it's not like Mary has suddenly materialized inside him, which would make this, you know, very cut and dried, very boring, very standard. So that's kind of the one thing where the you know, the ball is still in the air, things are still at play at this point. I believe you read this before, Andy, before we even did this, started this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, this is an interesting one for me, because normally when we do this podcast, I'm kind of going in sight unseen on the first volume, but Inside Mary I have read all of before. So it's kind of like knowing that series in its entirety, you know, it really goes some places from where this first volume leaves off. You know, it covers a massive amount of kind of distance effectively in terms of its characters and where they end up and, you know, what's actually going on here. So it's kind of interesting and also a little bit weird to go back to the starting point, and because it's almost a bit of a slow burner to start with. I mean, until you get to the end of that first volume and that kind of twist in the tale where you suddenly realize, oh, it's not just a body swap, because Isao is also Isao. So, like, what's actually going on here? Like, it seems like it is your pretty cut and dried body swap kind of drama until it kind of throws that curveball at you at the end. But yeah, like, I mean, I really like this volume for a number of reasons. I mean, I like the way they build Isao's character to start with. There are so many manga and anime series that have kind of your loner, shut-in character that are kind of very cliched and written in a very kind of, you know, broad and kind of lazy way. But there's a really good description of kind of how he falls into that state as kind of the setup for that character. You know, he's not just your typical, like, oh, well, I'm too cool for everybody else, I'm just going to be a loner. Like, you know, he goes into college thinking, cool, I'm going to make friends, I'm going to get a girlfriend, it's all going to be great. But then he never finds the opportunity to kind of, you know, make contact and kind of get to know other people. And he just kind of slowly slides into this descent where he suddenly realizes he's basically on his own and friendless. And that's the point where he just kind of shuts himself off because, you know, it's all gone to pot. And like that feels like a very kind of realistic depiction of how that kind of thing happens, rather than the usual kind of, you know, more cliched way that a lot of series try to tackle that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it has a real good sort of setup. Like, it almost feels kind of languid in the setup, because it, especially someone who I've, you know, read enough body swap sort of stories, or even just like in a stranger body thing, but it sets up this hour really slowly where it's like, it's not like he suddenly goes, oh, by the way, I'm a shut-in. It's very clear he even knows its degrees, where like just one day in his second year he turns up to school, looks at the gate and goes and, you know, says like, I felt like someone was pressing down on me.
Yeah.
And then I could not do it anymore. And it's like, yeah, I get that. I know that feeling. But also, you know, he even has moments where he's like, I know I should yell, oh, I hate myself, oh, but he's like, no, I'm past that, I'm done. Like, I'm just sitting at home now playing Dark Souls, fuck it. Like, he just has fully sort of, not bought into, but is just fully into his own sort of state now, which is sad. But also it's real fascinating, because obviously given it's not a straight swap, one thing that's very interesting is the only one intentional thing we have received from Mary as a character is like a look over her shoulder in a two-page spread, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know anything about Mary's state, and we're discovering all of it secondarily. But it also makes, also the fact that Isao is very devoted to Mary in a weird way, like with the stalking, but also kind of viewing her as an angel. And then when he gets transposed into her body, you know, he does the whole thing of like, you know, obviously laying a blindfold in the bath, that sort of nonsense. You know, second chapter is him having to go to the toilet, and it's like, yeah, we've seen this before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting the way they play that up as well, because kind of the fact that we know nothing about Mary kind of then plays into that body swap thing, because of course, like, when it comes down to it, Isao doesn't know anything about her either. And so, like, he doesn't know, you know, who her friends are, he doesn't know anything about her life, what she does in her spare time. Like, you know, he does an incredibly bad job of trying to be her for this entire volume. Like, you know, it's so transparent from the get-go, literally everything he does, everyone's like, you're all right, what the heck are you doing? And like, he has to try and kind of like apologize his way out of it,
but he's also really bad at that as well.
And like, yeah,
it's kind of nice, because it's a good mixture where he's like clearly socially privated in some regards, especially when it comes to more adult relationships, but it doesn't try, it just does that as a matter of course, because that's how it would come out. Like, you know, he can't ask simple questions, because it's like, oh, how do I get out of this? I need to get out of this without being rumbled. You know.
Yeah.
And yeah, he does, at the end of the first one, he gets rumbled in a really fascinating manner, because it's like, wow, this is really roundabout, but also like a really fascinating way of actually getting to this and showing this. And like I say, the fact we don't know anything about Mary, and that he holds, and that Isao holds Mary in such like angelic esteem, makes it really fascinating. Of like, this is really thorny ground for anyone to be walking on, especially him trying to act as his ostensible idol.
Yeah, there's also a really interesting point kind of early on as well, when he ends up in her body, where he kind of gets a taste of his own medicine, because he has to go out and there's just all these guys are kind of like ogling and like a clearly kind of, you know, undressing her with their eyes, and he kind of gets this moment of like, oh, this is what it's like to be on the receiving end of this is really gross. And it doesn't, that's one of the things that you'd maybe expect this manga to kind of dwell on and kind of dig into more, but it kind of just leaves it as it is. It's just saying, oh, by the way, like, this really sucks to be on the other side of, like, to being ogled like this by guys all the time.
Yeah, and like, a matter of course. Like, it's just like, oh, yeah, of course. And it's it hasn't dwelled on it, but at the same time, he still does it himself, because he's still an idiot dude in this lady's body.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so far very interesting. I almost barreled ahead and carried on reading it ahead of this podcast, but the bus Wi-Fi was garbage and would not load. So a quick note is, reading this digitally on Crunchyroll, it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Like, I've wanted to try and read more of the stuff on Crunchyroll because it's available. I pay for subscription, yada yada. I've talked about this at length in both on this and other podcasts, so apologies. But their infrastructure sucks for manga. Like, their mobile apps are garbage. Like, I've mentioned before, both on this and other podcast, and I've given out to you, Andy, in particular, about it, where you'll be reading on the Android app and you'll skim ahead a few pages, you'll move ahead a page, and it will show you a page from 10 pages back, like, just transposed into the flow. And so then you've got to quit out of the chapter and re-enter it to see the page as it properly is. And it's so garbage. And the web reader just doesn't work in modern browsers now because it's Flash-based. And so if you open it in Chrome, if you open it in Firefox, nothing. If you open it in Chrome, you've got to accept a warning and then it'll run. And that's fine, but it's still clearly creaky and not there. Like, it's especially given that they've already, like, pseudo-revamped their lineup once already when Kodansha went, oh, yeah, shit, we're trying to sell this manga. Maybe we shouldn't have it on here for free. And pulled a load and changed a load out. But you have things like this, which I think is totally worth a read, honestly. Like, to catch to the thing, like, I think Inside Mary is totally worth a read, especially if you did like Flowers of Evil or you're curious about this author's other works. I think this was written post Flowers of Evil, if I remember the...
I can never remember whether it was before or after.
Yeah, I looked at his bibliography on Wikipedia earlier, but I was on the bus. I'm going to blame that for all my mental deficiencies, I'm afraid. But again, it's so exhausting to want to be really into this, but reading it is actually a chore due to the applications being hot garbo.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of telling that I'm slightly happier with the Crunchyroll manga experience just because the app doesn't crash on me every 20 seconds. But yeah, like, I felt like it was gaslighting me at some point because I just kept getting pages that I'd already seen. Like, wait, didn't I read this page? And like, having to just flick backwards and forwards until it refreshed its cache and actually gave me the page that I was supposed to be reading.
Yeah, for a series that kind of has quite a lot of rolling tension and sort of slow creeping terror and dread and, oh no, I'm not in my right skin, but then it just goes and you're back 10 pages. It's like, ah, it's fucking goddamn, like, it's very aggravating. It's Crunchyroll manga. Like, at the same time, like, we can't really hold out hope for an improvement in it, really. But
no, not anytime soon. But I mean, I hope, I'm guessing from this that you've not read any of this beyond volume one before, or you have read it before?
I have not, no. Okay. I loaded up chapter nine in my phone, and the bus Wi-Fi conked out.
Yeah, because I'd be really interested, like, this would be a really interesting series to revisit when you've read a few more volumes of it, because the places it goes, I suspect at this point you probably have no idea where it's going, because it does stuff that you will not expect.
I'm really looking forward to that, honestly, because, like, this first volume is quite a slow burn. Like, it starts to pick up towards the end when you get, like, the, like, bizarre frenemy slash rival slash what the hell confidant, I suppose, is one way of putting it.
Yeah.
The character of the glasses. I forget her name.
Yeah, I didn't write down her name either.
Yeah. The one thing I did like, actually, while I'm quickly slipping through my notes, is that when Isao first wakes up in Mary's body, he has a real sweet cowlick going on, like a real big ass ahoge. I really liked that. And then I was really sad when he eventually combed it down. I was like, boo, boo. I mean,
it's kind of interesting, like, mentioning your name, because I find myself, like, reading the first chapter in particular and kind of wondering, like, did Makoto Shinkai read this at all before kind of your name came to be? Because it's hard to tell, because it is such a generic kind of body swap tale to start with. But at the same time, the way some of it plays out early on kind of feels very similar. And I couldn't help but wonder whether there was some influence there or not.
Yeah, I feel like maybe what my thing is that, like, the problem with body horror stuff, not body horror, body swap stuff, is that it has to, like, by definition, follow a few sort of precepts.
Yeah.
Of, like, the whoa sort of section, and then it moves on from there. Like, one of the ones that I liked was always the one in Well God Only Knows, where, like, basically the main character who ends up in a woman's body does not give a damn. And like the only thing that really torments him about it is he starts getting interested in Atome games, and then he goes down a dark path. I'll stop talking about that series now because it's not available in English, although it is in German, if you fancy. The character's name is Yori, by the way. Oh, yeah. The glasses lass. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the way it plays that twist to kind of get itself out of that typical body swap trope is really smart, because you get that point where the two characters come together, and this is normally the point where they would kind of become co-conspirators of like, oh yeah, we've swapped bodies, how do we fix this? And it's like, no, get away from me. What the hell are you talking about? I'm me. Go away.
Yeah, that bit's great. It's really fun watching, like, pseudo Hisao basically say, ah, please leave me alone, and running away, sort of ambling away.
Yeah. I mean, he literally basically runs away from her.
But he can't run, so it's more like a lollop.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a rabbit.
Which again, is kind of interesting because, you know, it's been bigged up that, like, you know, she's this angel that's the object of his kind of undying attention and affection. And then suddenly when she comes and talks to him, he's just like, wants nothing to do with it. It's like, you know, how does this play into things? It lays up a lot for a second volume, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, and plus it sets up enough that it's different enough that really is interesting. Like I say, well, once I can kick the app into shape, I'll continue reading. But yeah, it's a good read. Highly recommended. I'm probably not going to bother buying the Denver Books version because I don't buy physical manga if I can help it.
Yeah, it's almost a shame they can't somehow like sneak a digital version out as well that's better quality, because it's also like the image quality is not great on Crunchyroll manga either. Like, it's not the best.
No, it's for some of these titles, some titles more than others. But also, one thing that the Denver have sort of pimped is they're doing an entire retranslation of this series, and I didn't see anything too egregious.
No, it's one of those things that's probably difficult to tell. Like, maybe you'll see the new translation and be like, oh yeah, this is much sharper, because it felt quite basic. But then again, a lot of what it was laying out in its first volume is quite simple, so you know, it's difficult to tell whether maybe there's some nuance lost or whether, you know, it is just easy stuff in the first place.
There might be some more difference in the various characters' voices and such, because it did feel quite sort of flat.
Sure.
But no, it's really worth a. I must admit, the one thing that's quite nice is that because it is somewhat unmoored from some of the tropes of body swap stuff, is that I've now started imagining and treating every single character as a threat. It's like, oh, her best friend, I bet she's actually evil. Oh, the character who has her hair up, I bet she's evil as well. Because Isao doesn't know, and you're following things through Isao's point of view, and it's like, all these girls could be bullies. I don't know. High school girls are scary. So,
yeah. I think that is actually a thing that the volume plays up, is that there is a weird sort of underlying tension in every single thing. When someone like says, oh, you come to karaoke, it's like, well, what should the answer be? Like, I have no idea. And like, every single thing kind of becomes very pointed, because it's, you know, it feels like a test of, are you going to answer correctly or not? Yeah. And there is something to be said for that as well.
Which towards the end does get weaponized, which is a real...
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, that's a real strong thing. But yeah, Inside Mary, real good. I wish the Crunchyroll manga app was better, but whatever. You know, you get what you pay for. Of course, you can answer questions.
Is Mary, where is her... physical personality?
We don't know.
Yeah.
So the question was, where is Mary's personality gone? And that's the core question that we don't have answered yet. Like, the assumption is it would have gone to Isao's body, but no. So no one knows. At least I don't know yet. I'm only read a volume.
Yeah, I mean, I know because I've read it all, but I'm not telling you, so.
It's a screen tone club. Yeah, it's a screen tone club, not spoiler club. So, moving on to the intermission. I have one of these for every panel I'm doing this weekend. So, check out my cat. This is Ruby, sat on my lap when I was having to go get my dinner, but she wouldn't let me move, so I just have to sit for 5 minutes and then go make dinner. This is actually an excuse for us to drink water, but I've already drunk mine. Never mind. And here is both of them playing underneath a desk. Little bastards.
See, this is the problem when we just do audio podcasts normally, is like, we can't inject cat pictures into the middle of it.
Yeah. Someone needs to improve the MP3 ID3 tagging to allow you to inject cat pictures. But yeah, here they are hanging out. Shortly after this, one of them jumped up and then bit me on the nose. Fucker. Anyway, end of the intermission. So, topic two.
Yeah, so my pick for this podcast was Until Your Bones Rot, which was a series that I kind of picked up at random because I was just looking around for something to read, basically. And this is one of those titles where I just read the synopsis and thought, everything about this sounds like my kind of thing and something that I want to check out. So having this podcast as a vehicle to do so, I thought, well, now I can subject Elliot to my bad taste as well. So thus we both had to read it. And so this series, the first page is a boob joke, which is kind of like a really bad way for what seems like it's going to be kind of a dark kind of murder mystery thriller to it, you know, it's very much the wrong foot to start on. I mean, we talked on a recent podcast about A Bride Story. You can check it out on screentone.club. You know, that has a really fantastic first panel that tells you so much about the characters and the world and their situation without saying a single word. And, like, you know, that was something that really impressed me about that series. Whereas this just goes straight to, I don't know how to start this story. Let's just throw in a boob joke about meat buns. And it's like, oh, okay, fine.
Yeah. Let's just dangle the childhood friend angle right down here.
Yes, yeah. And then you have that. So basically the story is a bunch of childhood friends who are kind of, for the first chapter, really all we see is them just kind of hanging out and sort of, you know, bouncing off of each other quite a bit. And then at the end of the first volume, it kind of reveals, like, oh, by the way, like, there's kind of constant references that they have some kind of pact. And at the end of the first chapter, it's revealed that the pact is that they're basically trying to keep the fact that they murdered somebody a secret. So there is a skeleton buried in the ground, and, you know, they have all promised, obviously, that they're going to keep it a secret and not tell anybody, which, you know, always ends well in these kinds of stories.
Especially when you can't particularly trust people.
Yeah. So, obviously, at some point, somebody else finds out about this and kind of uses it to their advantage to basically blackmail these kids into doing their bidding, which obviously is equally nefarious as the fact that they've kind of got a skeleton hanging around. And so, you know, they've kind of end up getting drawn into whatever else is going on. And there's clearly some other very murky business that they've been thrust into. But in the midst of all of that is kind of, there's a lot of interpersonal drama between that group, because basically, you know, this murder happened 5 years ago when they were a lot younger. And it's something that I kind of both hope and wish that the series does more of. Because there are very clear undertones that, you know, all this stuff happened when these kids were literal kids, and now they've matured a bit, they're teenagers, you know, they're still not mature, but, like, their relationships have shifted and changed, and had it been under any other circumstances, most of them would probably have just drifted apart. Like, there's a very clear feeling that there's a lot between at least some of the characters where they probably just wouldn't want to hang out with each other anymore. Like, they've moved in their own different directions, but they're all kind of tethered to this one pact and kind of can't get away from each other, even though they're maybe, you know, not really kind of compatible as friends anymore. And that's kind of a really interesting angle that I just really want the series to play up a little bit more than it does. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's a feeling you got out of it as well.
I must admit, actually, sitting here, like, the whole... maybe it's because I've watched too many sort of, like, anime with, like, mismatched friends groups, or, like, you know, the sort of Recess, if you remember that cartoon, like the Recess crowd, where it's like one of each archetype hanging out, which, I don't know, my school life did not have that, because you got bullied to fuck, so you kept with your weirdos in the corner, damn it. It wasn't that bad, I swear. I just can't have other people who wore dragon hoodies and shit because I was a metalhead. But it never crossed my mind, the whole drift apart section, but I think you're really on the money there, because, like, some of them, like, engage more or less with the others, and so, and there's quite a lot of, like, bound up, very obvious unquieted feelings bouncing around. I think my third note is, like, oh man, a polygon already, like a romance polygon, yeah, already in place, and it's only getting thornier and stickier as time is going on, and motivations are all coming in play, and things are starting to get real thorny. Like, you almost think that if the characters had all agreed to never speak of this again and never see each other again, they'd be in a much healthier place, but then there won't be a manga.
Yeah.
So there you are. But one thing I want to mention about the body is that, for some fucking reason, like, and this is the dumbest move, like, maybe when you're 12, you're, like, dense. I mean, you know, most 12-year-olds are dense. But, like, motherfuckers, they got a bit of paper, signed their name, and put a bloody thumbprint on a piece of paper with the word oath written on it, and buried it with the body. Like, I'm sorry to throw that out there, but, like, I get it, like, 12 year olds do dumb shit, but, like, that nearly ejected me out of the manga straight out, because I'm like, this is so stupid. And also at the same time, like, Jumping a bit more widely, it feels it's a slightly clunky sort of manga, especially in its pacing and how it lays things out, where like it goes from being quite effortless and showing these sort of interpersonal relationships and tensions, and then it goes, oh, by the way, plot avoid event, and it's like, okay, that was, you just had to massage that in, but it's not very massaged.
Yeah, I mean, again, right from the get-go, I mean, the first chapter kind of repeatedly does that thing that manga often does, where, you know, you see a character, they say a thing, and then you have other passing students who are like, oh, isn't that the student council president, Jintaro Nakamura? It's like, yes, yeah, he is. Let me tell you everything about his character.
Yeah, isn't he dreamy?
Yeah, which feels really weird, because it doesn't even set itself up as, like, the start of the school year. Like, this is, like, middle of a school year, and so they're like, by the way, who's that guy? It's like, he's the student council president, you idiot. Like, have you not been paying attention for the last however many months you've been at this place?
Yeah, there's a lot of, as you know, are packed, and it's like, oh, fuck's sake, you know, it just comes across as being kind of clunky, like, which is like I say, it's a shame, because when it can handle things and relationships calmly, it's like, oh, this is quite interesting, and then it's just like the plot train comes roaring in, you know?
yeah it also has a problem. It tries to kind of intersperse its kind of darker and more horrific moments with bits of levity as well, and a lot of those really fall flat because it almost tries too hard, you know. It has no good way, like, you know, a good manga can have a really good kind of segue where you can have a dark moment and you can find a bit of gallows humor or something that kind of like lightens the mood. Whereas this just has this kind of complete 180 where, you know, bad things are happening, and then suddenly it's like, oh, somebody makes a dumb joke, and then it's just back to the bad things again.
Yeah. Or one of the cuts, and I feel bad for kind of robbing people of this, but I feel it's worthwhile, is that they are blackmailed into doing something awful and are coming to terms with the fact that, like, the shoe is very much on the other foot. They're not in control of the situation anymore. They're having to reckon with doing things they don't want to do, and other people trying to take responsibility or being told not to take too much burden. You know, there's a lot of different interpersonal sort of dimensions or dilemmas. And then they're at the beach. Like, legit, next page is two of the girls in bikinis. And it's like, well, okay.
Yeah, they're doing the whole splash in the water thing, having a great time. It's like, never mind what we did yesterday. You know, this is fun. Where's the beach ball? It's like, oh, God.
Well, there's two right here.
Thankfully, that joke was not in the manga, no, but I'm kind of surprised.
But yeah, they, as you might expect, between it being like teenagers and having a mutual secret and it being three boys, two girls, they, you know, stuff starts to get a bit wild. I must admit, like, there's an event that happens towards the end of this first volume between two of the principal characters who are, like, supposedly in a relationship, which kind of really flattened the probability space for one of the characters, like, intensely. Akira, like, basically comes out, it's like, oh, that's not what I expected for this character. And then I thought, oh, wait, this makes his character way more boring suddenly, where he just goes from being a mild enigma to, oh, okay, I guess you've just flattened down the space you had for this character.
Yeah, it's weird, because that kind of part of the volume is wrapped up in some quite interesting stuff as well. Yeah. And it's kind of the thing that I kept coming back to with this volume, is like, it gets part of the way there to being something really good, but it never quite goes all the way. It's like, I mean, the kind of the deed that they have to do that we've referenced, like, that's a fantastic point for them to introduce loads of dramatic tension, because they're doing this thing that is clearly, you know, they don't want to be doing, they shouldn't be doing it. All they needed was to interject, you know, a knock at the door or something banging on a window or something to kind of inject that tension of like, oh God, what's happening here? You know, are they going to get caught? Are they going to get found out? But it never does that. It just kind of carries on, and it just never kind of goes all the way to, you know, doing the things that you kind of want it to do to really make something compelling.
Yeah, it kind of plays up one thing in particular, which is enjoyable, where most of the demons and the fears are in the heads of the characters. Mm. Like, the actual external threats, although there is an external threat which is introduced, like the blackmailer, like, beyond that, most of it's just their own creation. Like, they are architecting their own doom in front of you. But again, it's one of these things where, like, when the series is just in general motion, I enjoy it greatly. But when it makes a point to do a plot event, it leans a bit too hard on it, and you know, something collapses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, even off the back of your point about them, you're leaving all their names with the body. It's like they go back and revisit it every year. It's just leave it alone. Nobody will know.
Yeah.
Like, don't go back there every year. You're just adding more evidence to something. Then it's like, oh no, now we've got to make an alibi. It's like, well, yeah, if you didn't go in the first place,
but it's real. It's if you can suspend your disbelief. I did enjoy reading this, and I have the second volume already because it is available right now as we speak. In a humble bundle, along with a whole heap of other horror manga, like the first two volumes thereof. So there's no complete series, but hey, you get like 14 different volumes of manga and a bunch of horror for like $18. So worthwhile. And I think it is in a Halloween sale at the moment that might not have ended on Crunchyroll.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
So it's seven volumes in total. So one thing I am excited about in a weird way is that it's got a set length. Like, I know it's not going to go on forever. It's got seven volumes. It's got that long to tell the story, and volume one is interesting. I've got volume two downloaded, but the file corrupted, so I need to re-download it. Thanks, Humble Bundle.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see, like, you know, what you think of it further down the line. Because my kind of closing thought on this first volume is that I'd like to read more of this, but written by somebody else.
Ooh.
Like, it feels like if it was left with a more competent writer who could kind of draw all the good stuff out of it, then you could have a really good series. I mean, again, we've talked a lot on this podcast about The Promised Neverland, which, you know, does a lot of very different things to this, but it has some kind of similar kind of conceits and similar things it wants to do in terms of dramatic tension, but it knows how to do it. And this feels like it doesn't. Like, it has ideas, it has a really good kind of core concept for what it wants to do. It just, its execution just falls flat far too often.
Yeah, I must admit, that the execution as well, because I feel like there's too many eggs in the air almost, where, like, even I feel like I'm sorry, I'm doing this again where I'm shadow writing the manga, but I feel like this manga could have been a very interesting story without the blackmail angle. Like, just let 5 17-year-olds get slightly paranoid and fuck each other up. Like, it's easy to do. Like, you know, you can have bad thoughts real easy, and then, you know, especially when they're having stupid rituals every year about the body, and it's like, guys, knock it off.
Yeah, there's a really good Mario Kart drama in that exact concept, because, like, that's the kind of thing that she would probably do quite readily.
Andy. But no, I enjoyed it, and we'll see how my current feeling is that, like, I have two volumes of this. I'll read the second volume and then see where I am.
So. Yeah, I think that's fair. I'll let you read the second volume, and then you can let me know whether to carry on.
Very kind. Yeah, it's worth noting. I mean, one thing I did find from looking up this manga after you signed it was that Yay Utsumi, the author, like, apparently has done nothing much else. Like, I couldn't see anything else available, let alone in Japan, Japanese, let alone English. So.
Yeah, it was a name that was unfamiliar to me. It was literally just like, oh, this synopsis sounds cool, so I guess I'll check this out.
Yeah, good title at the very least,
and also a good title.
One thing to mention actually is the art. I quite like the art. It's very scratchy, very etchy. Mm. Like, etchy as in etching, not as in titties. although it has those too. I kind of enjoy the I like the sort of the scratchy sort of artistic style, which, you know, it has, you know, characters doing things under duress, and so it really helps draw that out when they're, you know, their actual art is starting to discombobulate, and their sort of outlines are starting to, you know, just sort of spread out and get a bit more raggedy.
Yeah, it does a good job of displaying that side of the kind of emotional scale, for sure.
Yeah, but not one to read if you're squeamish.
No,
there's a lot of, you know, I'm someone who has to look away from frigging Casualty, guys. Like, this is a bit much.
Yeah, don't, as you learn, like, don't read this while eating your dinner.
Yeah, I was eating a pie while reading this. I messed up. So, is there anything else?
No, I think that's everything from me.
So, moving on to our picks for next week. Next episode even, sorry, we're not yet weekly. I took advantage of the recent Yuri manga sale on Bookwalker and bought Mushroom Girls in Love, which is... It sounds interesting, and the synopsis had enough proper nouns in it to confuse the pants off of me, but it's a one-volume banger. In one and done, like, in and out.
This isn't going to be some kind of Mario fan fiction, is it?
I can't tell if that make it better or worse.
Me neither.
Hey, there's a Bowsette already at this convention. You know, this we're already at ground zero for this.
Bowsette.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so ironically, my pick for the next podcast is also a Yuri manga, but not because of a sale, just because I've been watching the anime adaptation, and it's been really, really good. But it's also been good in a way that makes me curious as to how that translates, you know, from the source material, because there's a lot about the way, you know, stuff is kind of framed and depicted in the anime adaptation specifically. That, you know, I'm really curious to see whether its strengths are there in the source material. So I have picked Bloom Into You, Volume 1, which I'm very keen to read.
Yeah, I am as well. I've bought Volume 1 and 2 as part of the sale, so I'm just going to keep throwing myself under this bus. Like, hey, man. I must admit, the one thing I actually quite sore about is I bought, like, 3 volumes of Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid in the like before the Yuri sale started. So I was like, fuck! You know, just like, oh, I completely jumped the gun on that, didn't I?
Yeah. If you wait for anything long enough, it'll be on sale. It's the golden rule, I guess.
Yeah. If you wait 5 weeks, then Witchcraft Works will be on sale yet again, as will Flying Witch. I love how, sorry, complete tangent, but I love how Comixology put Flying Witch on sale in their Halloween sale when it is the single most chill manga you'd read. Like, I know, but the most offensive they do is make thingy they do is make pancakes. Like, great manga though. Oh god. So yeah, there we are, pressing the button. So I was hoping to have some sort of interactivity for this panel, but fell flat. Apologies, blame the cold I had last week. But thank you very much for coming to this live podcast recording.
Thank you very much.
We are Screen Tone Club. As a quick pimp, you can find all the rest of our episodes at screentone.club. The URL came first, the podcast name came second. We have a Patreon, which you can use to support us. We are currently, very kindly, due to people's donations, have our hosting cared for, which is really greatly appreciated. We have bonus episodes, which you can get for the mere price of $1 a month, plus that fucking Patreon. But we have just published our first bonus episode, which was like a 45-minute deep dive into
Wotokoi.
Yes, Wotokoi, which was voted on by our Patreon subscribers. So if you want us to read some atrocious elf bride-based light novel, you totally can. Although we already did that ourselves anyway. You can find out what we thought about an Archdemon's Dilemma, How to Love Your Elf Bride, in a previous episode.
Yeah, we had thoughts about that.
Yeah, who'd have thought? One of our Demels Award, a friend who I'm also calling out on this show, keeps like haunting me and saying, you should pick up volume 2, Elliot. And I'm like, no, what is it's like when you know in cartoons when you get the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other. This is just a Fujoshi who's like the third character that appears. Like, what the fuck?
I mean, is that just like the light novel equivalent of like, well, if you watch 200 episodes of One Piece, you'll start to really like it.
I'm glad that Brian's in a different panel at the moment, else he'd come in and stab us. But anyway, so yeah, you can subscribe if you so fancy, if you wish, and you can get that deep dive on Wotokoi, which I really enjoyed, actually.
Yeah,
I'm really glad we got that. And yeah, so we're going to be offering out voting rights for November starting soon once I can get my laptop. But anyway, thank you very much for coming. Lovely to have an audience. I was joking at the start that we had like 2 people in the audience. I'm like, oh, this is just like back home when I got a pair of cats watching me. But now I have people.
Yeah, that just means you need to get more cats, I guess.
Yeah, totally. Jesus.
I've got a question.
Okay, yeah, we've got a question from
you. Can you post the pictures of the cats on the Patreon as well?
I don't post the pictures of the cats on the Patreon, but I do have lots of them on my website.
I mean, they should probably be its own tier on the Patreon. Yeah. Like, if you give us enough money, we'll give you the cat pictures. Yeah.
Okay, there's one last thing to mention, which is, this is a weird, like, not even a running joke, but a thing I brought up at a previous episode. So I have a small surprise for you, Andy.
Oh, God.
So I remember I mentioned to you before, and I've mentioned on the podcast before that, my battery's dying, that you posted a picture of you at a nature park, and you posted a picture of a polar bear.
Yes, I did indeed.
So my mother saw that for some godforsaken reason.
Okay.
And
I don't know where this is going, but...
So my mum knits an awful lot, and so she made this for me.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Thank you very much.
So for those who can't see, my mum basically knitted a rather big polar bear for Andy. It's got a little scarf and everything. We'll put a picture on the website.
This is your new co-host. I can retire now.
Ah, oh, fuck. But I can't get a polar bear to read light novels.
Yeah, it'll love Elf Bride, I'll tell you.
Yeah. It will love Polar Bear Cafe, that's for sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's maybe don't play on the audio, but whatever. So
yeah, we'll post pictures. If you're listening, yeah, we'll post pictures on our Twitter, etc. of said knitted polar bear.
Yeah, he doesn't have a name yet.
I mean, the two polar bears in the pictures that you probably saw were called Arctos and Hamish, so it should probably be one of those two in tribute to them.
Hamish is such a good name for a Scottish polar bear.
I mean, of course, yeah. What else would you call it?
Oh, so good.
I mean, at least they didn't call him Polar McBear Face.
Oh, God. Or Shiro. Yeah. So anyway, another quick pimp of our other panels for this weekend, for those who are in attendance. I will skip past that. And finally, thank you very much for coming. It's been lovely.
Yeah, thanks very much, everyone. You've melted everybody's heart.
Like, I legit came home one day and she's like, oh, I'm putting together this polar bear. I'm like, what? And it was like, it wasn't even fully sewn up yet, so it was just these bits of polar bear just laid
that
out.
Sounds terrifying.
On the coffee table. I'm like, this is this is a nightmare. But yeah,
well, I was not expecting to end up with that with us this weekend, so thank you.
Sorry. Oh, do you want to hit the stop button on there?